Hello, I'm Mark Lowen. Welcome to The Documentary from the BBC World Service. In BBC OS Conversations, we bring people together to share their experiences, and this time it's conversations on the historic re-election of Donald Trump. In the United States, the winner takes all, and it seems half the country is delighted, the other half is fearful for the future. In our conversations, we bring together excited Republicans, two Democrats concerned for women's rights, and hear from Ukrainians uncertain about what happens next.
A lot of people in Ukraine are very, very almost panicked. I've spoken to a number of high-profile politicians and businessmen and opinion leaders. They worry that Ukraine will be sold out by Trump.
On the 20th of January, Republican Donald Trump will be sworn in as the 47th president of the United States. His domestic pledges include promises to bring down prices, tackle immigration, introduce tariffs on imports, and cut tax. Throughout the election campaign, we've been hearing from people from across the US, Republicans, Democrats, and those who are undecided, about the issues that matter to them. Last time, just before the vote, we featured conversations on the rising cost of living, and Donald Trump's pledges on the economy seem to have been a big factor in his victory.
I want to thank the American people for the extraordinary honor of being elected your 47th president and your 45th president. And every citizen, I will fight for you, for your family, and your future. Every single day, I will be fighting for you, and with every breath in my body. I will not rest until we have delivered the strong, safe, and prosperous America that our children deserve and that you deserve. This will truly be the golden age of America. That's what we have to have.
Before we get into our conversations, let me share with you this message we received from a very excited Trump supporter shortly after that speech.
This is Whitney Weed in Reno, Nevada. I just am absolutely so pumped. I'm just so excited. My stomach was in knots all day, and having this win tonight, it was just so beautiful. Just as the numbers were coming in, I just couldn't really believe it that it was happening. I'm just thrilled. I thought he did a great job with his speech, and it just absolutely inspired me to be excited for the future. And I feel hopeful for our country. I feel excited for what's to come. I know there's going to be a lot of hard work to be done. Like he said, we have a lot of healing to do. We have a lot of things that need to be fixed, but I'm totally here for it. I was also just really surprised by the numbers that came in for Nevada. I know that they're not all the way in yet, but I'm just like, wow, Nevada, awesome. Really happy about that. You know, these are my thoughts. So I'm just really excited. I'm just looking forward to the future and for my children and for our country and for the peace that this will bring to us. So really excited. Thanks so much.
And thank you so much to Whitney for sending us that message. Our first conversation was broadcast live on our daily OS program on Wednesday, just a few hours after the result was called. We brought together two women who campaigned for the Republicans. Marcia is in Florida, and Michelle is an elementary school teacher from Pittsburgh in the swing state of Pennsylvania. First, why did they think Donald Trump won?
I don't think you can really state one reason for America just really working to make this happen. There's so many layers to why America needs change to survive. First of all, I think we need to restructure the way our politicians are. They shouldn't not be career politicians. They make $174,000 a year, yet mysteriously and magically, they are multi-millionaires. So that makes them not work for us. They work for their interests and what they are going to gain from it. That's the root cause of where we are. But also, our veterans and our seniors are just being cast aside so that we could support an invasion, which you can only state was an invasion of our border. They were getting all of our resources. Just the progressive policies.
You're talking about the illegal
absolutely.
Migrants here.
Yes, yes. You cannot have a country with open borders. And just the progressive nature that the left was trying to instill, America's had enough of that. We just want common sense.
I mean, Democrats would say, of course, there is no open border and that actually Kamala Harris tried to push a border control bill, which the Republicans torpedoed. Marcia, can I just shift the conversation from immigration to the economy, the other big winning factor for the Republicans? Was that important for you? And to what extent are you kind of hurting from the cost of living at the moment?
The economy is a big deal because it's like everybody, whether you're rich or you're poor, felt the price differences in the when you go to the grocery. And like in 2020, Trump said if he doesn't win, gas prices is probably going to go to $4, $5, $7 a gallon. Nobody believed him. And I think although we were disappointed in 2020, we needed the last 4 years so we could see the difference between Trump and the Biden administration when it comes to the economy. And I think that was one of the main factors where Trump was able to get the minorities from 8% to 15% to like probably 25 and over percentage that helped him to win this election by the popular vote also and Latino vote. Because it's like you have to be able to help your family and be able to buy stuff. And even Cardi B, who was backing Kamala, she was complaining about her taxes being very high, and she wanted to vote for the same thing for Kamala, and it wasn't going to help her. And Trump is going to be looking also at taxes. That's one of the things why I voted for him also.
He said in the last couple of days before the election that he will protect women whether they like it or not.
Well, he was talking about safety, and the Democrats changed it to make it sound like if he was talking about an abortion. And he was I listened to the rally, I heard it in person, and it was about safety. He wanted to protect us. I want to be able to, when I get out of my house, I want to feel safe. And he has nothing against immigration. He wants to have legal immigration where people are vetted, because it's like you have Lincoln Riley and people jogging in the parks and then they're being murdered by people who were not vetted to come into our country. So, yes, I want a president who is strong on safety.
I couldn't have said it any better. I agree with everything she said. And, yes, those people that are saying, I'm voting for Kamala because I want my daughter to have these, I can't even imagine having a daughter and thinking that that was the best choice.
You're talking about abortion and reproductive rights here, that Kamala Harris said she
I'm
wanted to enshrine.
No, I'm talking about the safety of our children. Our children, our girls are losing scholarships because they're allowing boys to play in girls' sports and coming into their restrooms, and there are no safe spaces for our girls anymore.
Would you be in favor of further restrictions on reproductive rights?
No, and I think America is just, I'm pro-choice up to a point. And I think most of us are, okay, most of us, yes, if you choose to have an abortion, if you do it within a certain amount of time, most Americans are okay with that.
Republicans Marcia and Michelle. Let's turn next to supporters of the Democratic candidate and current Vice President Kamala Harris. We talked about abortion in our last conversation, and in an effort to appeal to women, Harris made the issue of abortion central to her campaign. She advocated for legislation that would safeguard reproductive rights nationwide, although Trump said he would not sign into law a national abortion ban. We brought together Annette in Pennsylvania, she's originally from Puerto Rico, also Amanda in Tampa Bay, Florida, and Ashley in Oklahoma City. All Harris voters, they now fear for the future of women's rights in the United States. I asked them for their reaction to the result.
I just felt kind of sick, but I also just remembered that my mom had lived through a lot of administrations that she didn't agree with, and she was able to somehow raise an optimistic person like me, and I have to raise an optimistic person like my daughter. So the work continues. That's what I just keep telling myself, the work continues.
I actually was up until pretty much the wee hours of the morning just watching. I was online with a group of other Latinas, and we were just seeing all the results come in. It was devastating. I, you know, wanted to cry. I could not believe that that's where we were heading. It's 2024 and we shouldn't
really still be having these fights.
Yeah, I would say my sentiments were really similar to Ashley's. I couldn't watch out of just like anxiety, but I woke up this morning and kind of saw how everything had shook out. While it's too like early to call like deeper takeaways from this election, I think my initial assessment was just that women still have a harder time, you know, succeeding in this country. I think there's a lot of points to prove that, and women have been fighting for rights for generations and will continue to do that, and I think just hoping for the future in that regard.
Do you fear for women's rights, Amanda, in the light of Trump's victory?
I do, especially being in Florida when abortion didn't pass. It's very obvious Trump has no respect for women, but not only that, our abortion amendment didn't pass, and so we effectively have a six-week ban. I'm assuming that this is not going to be the end of where our reproductive rights stop. I'm sure the Supreme Court will rule for contraception limits, and so I'm sure this is only the beginning, which is very concerning to me.
Ashley, this is something that I understand you have a strong connection with, of course, first as a woman, but also I understand you had an abortion. You're happy to talk about it openly, and I wonder how you now feel about abortion rights and access to abortion going forward in the light of the Trump victory.
Yeah, when I had my abortion, there was only one place in Oklahoma to have it, and it still was incredibly difficult and expensive to get, and now in Oklahoma, there's no way to get it. I feel scared because I was in a monogamous relationship. I was a college-educated woman. I was in a committed relationship, but he decided he didn't want to help me have a child, and I did not want to be a single mother again, and I decided to have that. The archetype of women who get abortions look like me. It's mostly women who are already parents. It's mostly women who are college educated. It's mostly women who are already in relationships. And it just drives it down into these scary places like basements and taking medicine that you don't know if it's going to work or not. And there are going to be so many more deaths of women because they are not able to have access to this very key right that we should have. I'm not telling someone they should or should not do this, but I am saying that they should be able to decide that for themselves. And the fact that they cannot is, quite frankly, completely against what America stands for.
Annette, you were born in Puerto Rico and you were raised there. Donald Trump, during the campaign, promised the biggest mass deportation of migrants in America's history. There was, of course, the comment from the comedian at his rally calling Puerto Rico a floating island of garbage. Why do you think it is that he gained so much amongst Latino voters?
I think it does have to do with machismo. He does portray himself as a man of man's, right? He's the ultimate, I guess, the ultimate man, you know, in charge of his life. A lot of people that I've talked to, the Latino men, are saying they did not vote for her because they didn't think a woman can be a president, which I find a little interesting because those are also the same men that will go to their abuelas and their mothers and their tias and, you know, their wives to get advice about different things. So I think machismo had a lot to do with that.
Can I ask all three of you, why do you think Kamala Harris just couldn't make it?
I unfortunately think that white supremacy won. We can blame third-party voters. We can blame more Latinx, Hispanic voters. We can blame black men voting more than last time. We can go across the board. But overall, white supremacy and wanting to be close to it and having its powers won the day. And that scares me more than anything because I have friends of all races, of all nationalities, of all ethnicities, of all gender and sexual orientations. And the fact that my community and the people that I see fighting for equality don't look like and are not being represented nationally. I'm African American. I am queer. Most of my community is queer. And it is dismaying to just see that today it kind of feels like America does not love me the way I love it.
You know, there's a lot to be said about, you know, the fact that white supremacy has been given once again a platform you know, I don't want to say that it's solely because she's a woman and she's a black woman, but that will have a little bit to do with it. Misinformation was rampant also. It was everywhere. It is difficult to try to fight that on a daily basis, especially from people that will get all their information from, you know, online sources exclusively.
I don't know if you can say one thing. I'm sure as we look back, there'll be like tons of nuances and multitude of reasons. My perspective is, I think, a lot of misogyny, to be honest with you. I think the only man that ran against him beat him. And when he ran against Hillary, he lost. When he ran against Kamala, he lost. And so from my perspective, I just think that there's a lot more misogyny than people are wanting to admit. And I think the fact that she is a woman played a large role in the reason that she lost, which is really unfortunate. But that's just my perspective.
Democratic voters Ashley, Amanda and Annette. Our first two conversations give a sense of the divisions between Republicans and Democrats in the United States. I'm Mark Lowen and this is BBC OS Conversations from the BBC World Service. The result of the election is already sending ripples around the world. Donald Trump's trade, climate and foreign policy decisions will have implications for many people. The president-elect famously promised that he would end the war in Ukraine within a day. That led to speculation that the US could withdraw aid or force Ukraine to give up territory to Russia. Ukraine's president, Volodymyr Zelensky, sent an early message of congratulations and talked up the political and economic opportunities a partnership could provide. I spoke to Vadim Granovsky. He's a businessman and owner of a coffee shop in Kyiv, although he's currently in the UK. And Timofey Milovanov, an economist in Kyiv.
A lot of people in Ukraine are very, very almost panicked. I've spoken to a number of high-profile politicians and businessmen and opinion leaders. They worry that Ukraine will be sold out by Trump. But I disagree with all of that. I think actually Trump will be an opportunity for Ukraine to bring the war forward to the closure. We already have seen how Zelensky, President Zelensky, moves towards a very pragmatic conversation, and that's evident in his language about mutually beneficial economic and political relationships and the strengths of the United States and how it will look good for the United States and Trump specifically to be a strong man who can put Russia in its place.
Where I disagree with Timofey is there is nothing Donald Trump can do to force Russia to do anything. It's not about forcing someone anymore. I don't think that works in the modern world, and I don't think it works particularly because it becomes an ego clash between Trump, Putin, or any other authoritarian leader in the world. So this is where I am afraid of this ego clash between powerful men in charge of the countries and where it takes us, Ukraine, because we become a battleground for big egos.
Yeah, Vadim, but if there will be a clash like that between different egos, and I agree with you that it might be likely because both of them are very, very strong and want to appear strong, and their power is built on their strengths, I think that would mean Trump will strengthen Ukraine by giving weapons or admitting to NATO or doing something else, not necessarily NATO, but doing something which will strengthen his card, because it will be like, okay, Putin, you don't want to do that. Okay, or else. And this else will be, I'll do something which you don't want, and he definitely doesn't want Ukraine to be stronger.
Possibly. I think if Trump fails to achieve the result he's putting, as a second strategy, it would be heavily arming Ukraine and sort of supporting us fully, which there is a slim chance this is what's going to happen. But the bigger picture of this second scenario, in my opinion, is literally a third world war, because we are not dealing with Russia anymore, just Russia. There are other countries, North Korea, Iran, China, India to a certain extent, where any enforcement will lead to a bigger war. So again, as much as I want a victory for Ukraine, I don't see victory purely as a military defeat. I think there is a hybrid strategy which has to be put in place involving military achievements, diplomatic, and any other means requiring to actually progress, stop the war and progress in peace and security.
Timothy, I mean, during the debate with Kamala Harris, Donald Trump refused to say whether or not he wanted Ukraine to win the war. You know, he's widely seen as much closer to Vladimir Putin than to Zelensky. He's spoken refused to deny reports that he's spoken to Putin seven times since leaving office. Do you really believe that he believes in a Ukrainian victory?
Oh, yeah, it's an excellent question. But I also think the precise question at the debates was whether the victory of Ukraine is in the United States' interest, and he refused to answer. He evaded the question. But also Kamala Harris, when she was given an opportunity to answer, she went on arguing or giving evidence how much the United States has supported under the Biden administration Ukraine, but she did not make a very clear statement. So it is true, that's a concern that maybe he's not a believer that Ukraine either can win or should win. But it is also, in my view, means that he is a believer that he can make it happen. It's up to him to decide what's going to happen. And that, of course, means that Ukraine right now needs to work hard on finding very pragmatic ways to offer the U.S. administration something which would motivate them to create better conditions for Ukraine. And this could be recovery contracts, this could be investments, that could be security opportunities, and something else which I might not even know. But at the same time, I kind of agree with Vadim that results or the outcomes of the wars often are not decided by people in the capital, by presidents. No matter how powerful the U.S. president is, his influence is limited. So I kind of agree with Vadim that Trump might be overestimating his leverage over Russia or over Ukraine for that matter, and being able to cut a deal quickly. But the attempt will be there, and this attempt is an opportunity for Ukraine.
We are now discussing U.S. elections, so I understand why we talk about U.S., but there are so many other countries and so many other people who can play a vital role. I'm talking about Europe, I'm talking about Turkey, I'm talking about Japan, South Korea. There are so many countries who can play a big role in stopping this war. Again, I'm not saying winning this war, because I don't think anyone will win this war. Russia already lost and Ukraine lost because this war is happening. So to stop this war and sort of lay foundation for the future security, I think this is a goal for every single country in the world, every single leader in the world.
Vadim and Timofey from Ukraine. And perhaps Donald Trump's policies on Ukraine will become clearer in the next few days and weeks as he puts his government together. Thanks to all our guests this week. I'm Mark Lowen, and you've been listening to The Documentary from the BBC World Service.